The following program is rated M for a mature audience. It contains coarse language.
Over the river and through the woods, it's the Nate Darling Show. Featuring Jason Casey, Sam Platts, Kareem Daniels, and Diana Hong. And now, fully in holiday mode, here's Nate.
Ho, ho, ho. I guess. Oh, hi. Turn that down, turn me up. Hey, it's Christmas is over by the time you hear this. Not when we record it, but it's the way the thing goes. We want you to have fresh new shows all the way through, so as we record this, it's December 22nd. So, hey everybody, how's it going? Jason and Kareem join me.
Hello everyone.
Boom.
Diana's sexy time was more important than you, the listener.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Oh, is it Kwanzaa?
It's the day after Christmas.
We're a few days after Christmas. Today would be the 30th.
So it's the sixth day of Kwanzaa, I think.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool.
The fifth day of Kwanzaa.
You can figure it. You can Google it if you need to. Yeah. What day of Kwanzaa is it? On the fifth day of Kwanzaa. Anyway. Is that not a song?
It should be.
It should be. We should do that. Yeah. Maybe next year we'll work on that.
Next year we'll work on that one.
We'll work on that. We'll have to remember. Coming up on the show today, Tina Fey says nay. Patton Oswalt gets into a Twitter fight. That's pretty common. And Bernie Sanders tries to take out Donald Trump at the knees.
Bam.
Yeah, all that. And more fun stuff. But first, as we only have a couple days left in 2015, gentlemen, any New Year's resolutions? Start with you, Jason.
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and I think my resolution, it's not so much a resolution, it's just a goal for the next year, is to be more creative and get out there more, doing improv or shows or whatnot, to dedicate at least 3 nights to 4 nights a week doing that.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
This counts as creative, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Just so you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
This totally counts.
Oh, yeah.
It's what we do. So that's your big goal. I like the I like the term goal, although it says New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
It's I really like more setting goals for your new year.
Yeah.
Because resolution, you just go, well, I didn't make it.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on.
Exactly.
Moving on. So more creativity out of you.
Yeah, more creativity.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. Kareem, anything for you?
30 new minutes of stand-up.
Oh.
Boom.
So, when I met, Corey Holcomb, he said, you should do 20 new minutes a year. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be an overachiever. I'm going for 30 new minutes for the year.
You're going to go 50% higher than that.
Yes.
I've got the standard one. We've been working out with a trainer. Leslie and I have. Well, Leslie's been working out with a trainer for a while. She brought me in on that. And we have, as we go into the new year, probably about a dozen sessions left with him.
Mm-hmm.
So between that and how I've changed my diet and stuff like that, it's a weight loss and get healthy thing. And my blood pressure is down. I'm actually off, not completely off one of the medications, but my medicine has been halved.
Damn,
which is the
son.
same thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just to continue on with that is to keep on being healthier and, just being, you know, be able to enjoy life more, because when you're really overweight and you're really unhealthy, everything is an effort and it's no fun.
Yeah.
You know, and the training sessions, they're a weird cross between a great deal of fun and pure physical torture.
Boom.
And the one I had on the 21st, Leslie was supposed to go with me, but she had a sore throat and then she was sick, so she couldn't go. So I went alone. So I got 45 minutes of hell. And we do a lot of TRX stuff, a lot of resistance stuff, and a lot of core training is what I do with him.
Yeah.
And at one point, it was... For lack of a better term, I'm holding on to a stick with a tension band on the end of it, and I'm holding it out, and I have to hold it for a certain amount of time without moving it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an ab and a core exercise. And then he starts hitting the, as he's counting down, he's hitting the band, and he keeps hitting it harder and making it go further. And by the last 10 seconds, it felt like somebody had come across and kicked me with a leg right across my abdomen. Just boom.
Cool.
And then we wrapped the thing. He did something. Now, this is something I had done in high school where you get up against the wall and you slide down. It's sort of like doing a squat against the wall.
Yeah.
Anybody who's done anything in athletics has probably done this. Except he brings me a 30-pound kettlebell and says, here, I want you to hold this by the horns. If you know what a kettlebell looks like, you know what I'm talking about. So you hold it, and your hands sort of make a W. That's what it sort of looks like. He says, I want you to do presses out and back, straight out and straight back, for 30 seconds as fast as you can. I made it to 20 seconds when literally all of my muscles said, you're done. You are done. Everything but my legs. My legs did not collapse, but I just stopped. He's like, that's good. And I went down to the locker room, and I changed, and I'm walking out of the locker room, and my stomach felt so bad. And I felt a little bit of stomach acid come back up into my mouth. You know when you get that little chunk or whatever?
Yeah. Oh, no.
As I'm walking out, it was just like, I wanted nothing more than to throw up in the parking lot.
Yes.
But I did not. That is the closest I have come to throwing up from working out. Yeah. So that was just brutal. But, you know, there's a part of me that really enjoys that because it's the challenge. And, you know, growing up playing sports, you do that all the time. And it's just you're pushing and you're pushing and you're pushing.
Right.
Yeah.
And to have somebody doing that with you is just crazy. But yeah, planks, lots of planks.
Yeah.
Plank like this, plank like that, plank like this, plank like that.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The other part of my resolution actually is to lose some weight. I'm up to like 220.
Oh, well, there you go. You should do planks.
I like to get back down to about 195.
Me too, but I have much further to go than you do. So that's all going on. But
today is the fifth day of Kwanzaa, which is Nia, which is purpose.
Okay. Well, we have a purpose, which is to be better in 2016.
Exactly. Be less of us, but better.
Right. More concentrated us.
Yes.
Is what we're looking for. Speaking of that, how's everybody ringing in the new year? Anything good and exciting? I'll start. We're going to pop champagne here at home. Maybe we'll go out and watch the fireworks over Old Sac at 9, because they set them off at midnight Eastern time. And then I remember a few years ago, there was a shooting in Old Sacramento on New Year's Eve, so they did not have the midnight fireworks.
Oh.
So I got up the next morning, I went for a New Year's morning run, and as I was finishing my run at like 7:30, 7:45 in the morning, I stopped before my house, I take a deep breath, and all of a sudden I hear explosions. And I take out my earbuds and I'm like, well, that's a great way to end a run. It's just the fireworks. You know who wasn't pleased? All the people who were out late partying.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people got woken up by the 7:30 a.m. fireworks. Because once they're loaded, they can't unload them. They have to blow them off. So that was an interesting sort of thing.
Is it Michael Cella that has the stand-up joke about that? Does he have, like, I just heard somebody make this comment, like, talking about the run and the because that we're just like that morning sucked.
Oh, the beautiful walks of shame that you see if you get up for an early morning run or even just a nice walk on New Year's Day. Oh, the walks of shame are a delight.
That's a good. I'm gonna do that.
Yeah, there's really no better way to start your year than to see really hungover or still drunk chicks walking home in their finest evening wear.
Drunk dudes, definitely. Like,
you know what? I didn't see a lot of dudes. It was a lot of chicks just walking home at 7 in the morning.
Guys are so much easier with the walk of shame, right? I mean, like, because they just put some water in their hair, walk, be like deuces.
Well, and the other thing is we usually guys don't dress up as much.
Yeah.
The difference between our day wear and our night wear is not, we don't like throw on sparkly shit because it's night.
You just be like, oh, that guy has to go to work today.
Right. Oh, he's wearing shiny shoes. He must have a good job.
Yeah. Man, I'm sorry, ladies. Sorry.
Well, you know, you did it to yourself. Yeah. Or you let somebody do it to you, and now look where you are.
You could at least made him drive you home.
Man, well, she didn't want to. Maybe she's an independent woman. She doesn't care, you know?
Maybe she just wanted to get the fuck out of there because she'd realized what she had done.
That guy was a hamster.
Mm-hmm. Like, I need to get home so I can get to the pharmacy for some Plan B. So Donald Trump won a big award. Congratulations to him. PolitiFact named Donald Trump's collective misstatements as its lie of the year. They said, in considering our annual lie of the year, we found the only real contenders were Trump's various statements that led to our readers poll. But it was hard to single just one out from the others, so we've rolled them all into one big trophy. PolitiFact checked 77 Trump statements and found out that 76% of them were mostly false, or my favorite category, pants on fire. So basically, for every four statements Donald Trump makes, only one of them is actually true.
And that's usually the one where he talks about himself. Like Trump. My name's Trump.
Norman Orstein, who's a scholar at the Conservative American Enterprise Institute, told PolitiFact, clearly a lot of voters still care about the truth. What we don't know at this point is what share that is.
Wow.
Because Trump's still doing very well, although Ted Cruz is catching him in some places. And here's your outlier. And I've said this from the beginning because he's the... I mean, not that he doesn't have his issues, because he does. But the most seemingly normal one of the group is Marco Rubio.
Yes.
And he's in third place at the right time. It's sort of like when you're going, like the Bengals are going into the playoffs with their quarterback with a broken thumb. Steelers going into the playoffs. They've got a team that's playing well.
Yeah.
Which one of those teams you want to back? Do you want to back the broken thumb? That's Donald Trump.
Yeah.
The thumb is broken. We've figured it out. In fact, the final Democratic debate of 2015, it was basically a lot of bashing of Donald Trump, both Hillary and Bernie Sanders. Martin O'Malley was mostly ignored because, well, that's really what should happen. He was trying to engage the other two, and they were basically just ignoring him like the little brother at the party.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, get out of here.
Let the people that are important talk.
Well, it was he would try to engage them and be like, yeah. Bernie Sanders, one of the great things about Bernie Sanders, whether you agree with his ideas or not, he sticks to his message. No matter where he's going, what he's doing, he sticks to his message. Much like Donald Trump calls other people losers, Bernie has his message. So even when he's talking about Donald Trump in this, he does stick to message. Take a listen.
What you have now is a very dangerous moment in American history. Secretary is right. Our people are fearful. They are anxious on a number of levels. They are anxious about international terrorism and the possibility of another attack in America. We all understand that. But you know what else they're anxious about? They're anxious about the fact that they are working incredibly long hours. They're worried about their kids, and they're seeing all the new income and wealth, virtually all of it, going to the top 1%. And they're looking around them, and they're looking at Washington, and they're saying, the rich are getting much richer, I'm getting poorer. What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do for my kids? And somebody like a Trump comes along and says, I know the answers. The answer is that all of the Mexicans, they're criminals and rapists. We got to hate the Mexicans. Those are your enemies. We hate all the Muslims because all of the Muslims are terrorists. We got to hate the Muslims. Meanwhile, the rich get richer. So what I say to those people who go to Donald Trump's rallies, understand, he thinks a low minimum wage in America is a good idea. He thinks low wages are a good idea. I believe we stand together to address the real issues facing this country, not allow them to divide us by race or where we come from. Let's create an America that works for all of us, not the handful on top.
Senator, thank you.
He sticks to his message.
Oh, man.
It's a good message, too, because that is what's been happening. I mean, when you fact check it all out, do the numbers completely agree with what he's saying? Not necessarily exactly. They're off by a few percentage points. But overwhelmingly, the rich people, the really, really, really rich people, and I'm not talking like the Adam Carollas of the world, who are making a few, like 1, 2, 3, 4 million.
They're still
a year.
In the 1%, but we're talking about the 0.5%.
We're talking about the people that are way up at the top, like that dick who bought the one Wu-Tang Clan album, hedge fund managers, and these guys who are making tens and tens of millions of dollars. Their income is going up much higher on a, even on a percentage basis, than somebody who's making far less. Because if you look at, if you look around, what did you get for a just ask yourself this, your last raise, you do a good job at work, what percentage raise did you get? My guess is it's somewhere between 2 and 3%, if you're lucky. Whereas these people who are making tens of millions of dollars are getting 10% raises. If they're making this much more, and it goes, well, their company's making more. It doesn't always work that way. So that it is happening. The question really is going to be, is it going to be Bernie? Is it going to be Hillary? And there was a big kerfuffle about the website where all of the election data came in, and they sorted it out after Bernie sued the Democratic National Committee.
Yeah, because I mean, like, how can they take everything away from him? He reported it within a half an hour. They fired the aide that may have been involved, and I mean, like, it just so it was just such a blatant attempt of to silence somebody,
right? And they did it on a Friday afternoon and
before he did his debate, the day before the debate.
And if you want to be quiet about something in the news, you release it on a Friday afternoon, and Bernie said, "No, well, I'm suing you." And so they kind of had to
come
around.
Oh, shit, we need to change that. Maybe we need to allow some access.
Hold on. Since he didn't, it's not like somebody from the Sanders campaign hacked into the website to get election data from the Clinton campaign. It was basically they opened up the site one day and went, shit, here's all the campaign data for the Clinton campaign.
Yeah.
And it had happened before, and they reported it immediately. This time, some overeager staffer decided to go, ooh, look at all this stuff, and wrote it down, and then they got fired.
Yeah.
So it was a very uncomfortable moment to have him talking about suing them when Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is the chair of the DNC, is sitting essentially in the front row of the debate.
Yeah.
I caught a little bit of the debate. I did drift off.
I didn't even hear about it.
It was on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
And Trump tweeted, he goes, listen, this many people watched the Republican debate, and only this many people watched the Democratic debate, and they were on a major network. They were on ABC on a Saturday night.
At like 6.
Where people had shit to do.
Yeah.
Right.
The week before Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. Not on a Tuesday. When, I mean, and here's the thing. The Republican debates are really like really bad car crashes where people will rubberneck on those goddamn things just to see what's going on. So that's why you have that many more people. No one's going to rubberneck for, look at that really good driving over there. My goodness.
Well, and you know, the DNC really, there's been so much against Bernie in the first place. Right. Like, and the thing is Bernie is coming in, and the amount of donations he's got, he hit the 2 million mark. Like, 2 million people have contributed to his campaign, right?
Yes.
Which is like a huge, huge thing. Like, they're finding out that there's a number of people that really support him, and they can't talk about it because the media can't talk about it.
Well, and the whole everybody went into this with the idea from the establishment that it was ordained from the beginning it was going to be Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
It was her time, it was her turn. And the people have sort of gone, hold on a second. Yeah. Hang on. Maybe we want something different. Maybe we want someone different than this.
They want him to go away.
My favorite part of the debate was the whole thing. They're like, Senator Sanders, would you like to apologize? And he said, yes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that happened. And I hope we can work together to make sure that something like that doesn't happen again. I was like, okay, so we're all going to behave like adults.
Yeah.
Good times.
That's why people like him. Because, like, he gets really upset when you should get upset, and then he, like, acts civilly, because that's what
you're supposed to do.
That's what you're supposed
to
do.
That's what grown-ups do.
And that's what a politician shouldn't be, somebody that stands by an ideal that says no, 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 no. It has to be somebody that can communicate effectively with somebody else and come out with something that works for everybody if possible.
Yeah, and when a mistake is made, they go, we made a mistake. I'm sorry. Let's work together to make sure it doesn't happen again. Speaking of the other debates, after the GOP debate came to an end, Patton Oswalt expressed to his Twitter followers he wasn't exactly loving what he was seeing from the conservatives. My hashtag GOP debate summary, help us at Senator Sanders. Not long afterward, Breitbart editor Ben Shapiro took issue with Oswalt's interpretation of how things went, tweeting, if this was your takeaway, you need help, but follow that star at Patton Oswalt, follow that star. Now, typically, people don't like it, even on Twitter, when expressing an opinion meets a response of you need help. As such, Patton and Shapiro ended up throwing a few more barbs at each other when things eventually took a really weird turn when Shapiro ended up taking neocon and dumb, or the mention of Irving Kristol, to be an act of anti-Semitism. Patton Oswalt tweets, I will, Ben, enjoy your never-was neoconservative shitscape. Give my love to Irving Kristol's dumb ghost. To which Ben Shapiro replied, there's nothing I appreciate more than celebrities dropping anti-Semitic slurs. Thanks at Patton Oswalt. Patton replied, of course, that's your go-to, you gloriously predictable little sparrow fate. Never stop, Ben. Ben replies, let me explain. You uber-rich, pseudo-socialist buffoon. You attribute Kristol's philosophy to me because I'm a Jew. Patton replied, Ben Shapiro, no, dum-dum. Kristol is the father of neoconservatism and helped popularize the term. That you're both Jewish is incidental. Tweeted again, and if being called dumb is anti-Semitic, you must experience epic levels of anti-Semitism on a daily basis. He continued, hey, at Ben Shapiro, you came at me guns blazing and now you're quiet. I'm not a transgendered reporter or anything scary like that. Let's chat. And Shapiro came back, clever. Now, when do you plan to give up your millions for the sake of ending income inequality? And, given that Crystal and I don't share a philosophy, you have no other reason to connect us, dimwit. Patton wasn't done. He said, wow, you understand socialism as well as you understand anti-Semitism, trans rights, and apparently Twitter. Shapiro, I was wrong. It appears Patton Oswalt isn't smart enough to know he's using an anti-Semitic slur. He's just a typical Hollywood dumbass. He continued, if you call us both neocons without regard to our philosophies, you're either dumb or an anti-Semite. Patton then said, then why are you wasting your top shelf gray cells losing an argument to me? Shapiro, please explain socialism to me from atop your mountain of Ratatouille money. And Patton finishes with, and you don't know how residuals work. Or mountains. And that's how you have a Twitter fight. You dipshits. It was just amazing. I used to follow Patton Oswalt on Twitter, and I can't anymore because he live tweets too many things. And seriously, I would open up Twitter and it would be nothing but a page and a half of Patton Oswalt tweets. And I'm like, I'm not watching what you're watching. None of this means anything to me.
Yeah, it's hard. Like when I first got on Twitter, like about 3 months ago, like I first started using Twitter.
Oh, you're a newbie.
I'm a newbie. And I like would open it up and I'd be like, holy shit, Rainn Wilson, stop fucking talking.
Well, Rainn Wilson's another one I followed and then had to unfollow because of that.
Yeah, but I had to realize that I was getting a text message every time on the phone.
Oh,
like,
no.
And then people started following me and then like I was following them and it was just like some people were just spam. Like,
yeah, right. you gotta get a lot of followers. I mean, follow a lot of people so you're not getting the same shit.
Oh my gosh.
I keep the number of people I follow to under 100. I keep it at about 98, 99, because I refuse to be one of those people who has like 2,000 followers and I'm following 3,000 other people.
Yeah.
Because there are people I actually want, and I know you can get in and go, this is my list of these people and this is my list of these people. And it's like, I get a lot of podcasts who follow me because they're like, oh, we follow you, you'll do a follow back, and you see you've been added to the list podcasts in Sacramento, and I'm like, oh good, that's meaningful to me. Because you're going to listen to my show, you're probably not, but that's okay. It's fine. I don't care.
Yeah, hey, you know what? Listen, we have people listening to us in Scotland.
We have people listening to us in lots of different places. And guten tag to all of you in Scotland. All of you Germans in Scotland.
There's a few.
There are, of course. It's a place to go. By the way, if you're listening now, I want to thank everybody who's been supporting us by clicking the Shop Amazon tab at NateDarlingShow.com. It's a great way to support the show. It doesn't cost you anything extra. And lots of great deals to be had on Amazon. So go ahead and check it out next time you need to buy something on Amazon. Go to our website first. You might even be there now listening to the show. You
probably are. Just click through.
Click that Shop Amazon tab at the top of the page and shop like you normally would. And it does not cost you anything extra.
And you help the podcast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you can get your Christmas shopping done early next year.
For next year.
For next year. Tina Fey is now annoyed with the internet's culture of demanding apologies and said, "I'm opting out because there's lots of outrage on everything these days online. Demands for apologies left and right. Tina Fey wants no part of it." For background, she is the one of the creators of the Netflix series The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which is about a young woman who tries to live a normal life in New York after being kept underground as part of a cult for many years. Now, one of the characters on the show, who's played by Jane Krakowski, who was also on 30 Rock, is a white woman who used to be Native American and rejected her heritage. The whole thing is played up in the same way that Faye did things on 30 Rock, but people weren't happy about the way show represented a minority group. In a profile for Netta Porter, one of the topics among many, including high school mean girls and fame, Faye touched on what was sensitivity to comedy and explaining a joke. She started out by saying, "Steer clear of the internet and you'll live forever." Nice job, old lady. Steer clear of the internet. By the way, that's where your show lives. How do you think we get Netflix? She said, "We did an Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt episode, and the internet was a whirlwind, calling it racist. But my new goal is not to explain jokes. I feel like we put so much effort into writing and crafting everything they need to speak for themselves. There's a real culture of demanding apologies, and I'm opting out of that." So I applaud the opting out of apologizing. I guarantee she will issue an apology within 2 months for something.
Oh, yeah.
Because as soon as you declare, "I am never apologizing again," you will do something for which it requires an apology.
As soon as you declare never on anything.
Yeah. Yeah. The one of the things that do not say never or always, because you're going to get burned by that. But I do applaud the sentiment, because I don't think you should have to apologize for everything.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Especially when you're creating art of any kind, whether it's comedy, whether it's a watercolor painting of ducks, whatever. You shouldn't have to apologize for it. If people don't get it, they don't get it. And unless you're very obviously, blatantly attacking someone, who cares? Really?
I think that, yeah, it's so crazy, right? Because you don't want, I mean, like, there's that sense of, like, but at the same time, like, is there a point where it gets too far? Is there a point?
You yes.
know, and it's, yeah.
Yes, there is.
It is, right? It's just tough, man.
But, I mean, and there's a very different standard when you're talking about broadcast television as opposed to
right.
cable television as opposed to
Netflix.
Something on Netflix.
Yeah.
All the way to a stand-up comedian.
Right.
Now, if you go to a comedy club and a stand-up comedian is doing a bit and you're offended by it, here's what you do. You get up and leave. Even flip them a bird on your way out.
Or you even wait. And you leave the show like an agreeable person. And when you see his name on a show again, you don't go to that show.
Or a lot of comedians will do meet and greets afterward, or they'll be like a line. If you really were legitimately upset about something in the show, stand in line and go, "You know what? I enjoyed part of your show. This part really kind of bothered me. And here's why." And if you've got a really legitimate reason why something bothers you, maybe you'll change their mind.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, you'll be able to express in a one-on-one manner, "Hey, what you said was kind of hurtful, and here's why." And it'll be food for thought. The thought might be, "Fuck you."
It might be.
It probably will be. Let's face it. If you want to wait in line for a half an hour to get a "fuck you," then go ahead, stand in line and tell that comedian you didn't care for that particular joke they did. But I'm just telling you, there are options.
Yeah, yeah.
There are options.
Well, and complaining about, like, it's just like, really, people, we should pick and choose battles of, like, what, like, you can't just fight everything, you know, like, and demand an apology. If you demand an apology from everybody, then an apology isn't worth anything.
Yeah, basically, that is very correct, Jason. You could not be more correct with that assessment. Hey, speaking of terrible things and things for which there are apologies, Miss Puerto Rico 2015 has been suspended indefinitely for posting a series of anti-Muslim tweets on Twitter. Her name is Destiny Velez, and she tweeted filmmaker Michael Moore last week after he launched a campaign that encouraged people to make signs saying "We are all Muslim" and post photographs of themselves holding the signs online. Okay, let me just say this. Let me just. It's something I've done. I encourage everybody to do it. When somebody does something on social media that you think is stupid or irritating, here's what you do. You block them, you hide them, you unfollow them, you ignore them. You don't engage because you're never going to get anywhere and you're only asking for trouble. And the other thing is, it's so liberating and freeing just to go, fuck you, Michael Moore, block. He'll never know, but it doesn't matter. Because then you don't look like an asshole and get yourself suspended. CNN obtained a screen grab from the from the Twitter page. Her Twitter page has been taken down, and she's apologized, of course, because she really means it. Among the messages she originally sent were, and I quote, "Muslims use our constitution to terrorize USA and plant gas stations." What? Huh. I don't know.
It's the most blatantly racist. It's so racist.
It's very ignorant. I know that.
What did they grow? Did they grow gas?
They're putting up Exxons all over the place, and we won't have it. She also tweeted, "There's no comparison between Jews, Christians, and Muslims. Jews nor Christians have terrorized agendas in their have terrorizing agendas in their sacred books, and all what Muslims have done is provided oil and terrorized this country and many others." I don't know. I don't even know what to say to that. It's just, stick to being pretty. You're doing okay with that. Just stick to it.
She's just leaving out some very important words because she's trying to be on Twitter.
Words. The Miss Puerto Rico organization issued a statement distancing itself from her comments, saying, "In regards to Miss Puerto Rico Destiny Velez's recent actions and the conduct, the Miss Puerto Rico organization feels that her words do not represent the integrity and esteem of our program, nor that of our board members, our sponsors and partners, or the national organization. Miss Velez's actions were in contradiction to the organization, and therefore, as a consequence of her actions, she has been suspended indefinitely. The Miss Puerto Rico organization will not tolerate any actions or behavior contrary to the Miss Puerto Rico organization." Whoops. They also tweeted, "The Miss Puerto Rico organization apologizes for the distress that Miss Velez's actions and conduct may have caused." Her tweet said, "I apologize to anyone who felt offended with my words."
I apologize
if you were offended. If you were offended with my words. Please, people, stop it. Just stop it. You're not helping yourselves.
Not in the least.
Stick to being pretty. You do it so well. So I know that's horribly sexist of me to say that, but I'm still saying it because that's what I do. That's my show, but I'm not going to apologize.
Now, the Nate Darling Show takes it to a simpler place. It's time for Small Town News.
I'm really sorry if you were offended with my words there.
I'm sure you were.
Just saying.
So sincere.
I'm not. Fuck you.
I was actually speaking specifically to her, so yeah. I'm not talking to you.
Yeah, you're looking right at me.
That's right. Jason, stick to being pretty.
I was talking to her, not you, Nate.
That I knew. Small Town News comes to us from Bend, Oregon. Annual entrancing trains draw a crowd in Bend. A few bright mini puffy coats lay strewn across the carpet of the Brooks Room in the downtown Bend Public Library, underneath the tables where toy trains traveled round and round. The children to whom the coats belonged were sitting entranced in front of the quickly moving vehicles. "Are you ready for this?" a mother asked as she entered with her toddler, adding to herself, "Am I ready for this?" It's true. Many of the parents who brought their children to the Train Man All Aboard event were stepping into a commitment of an hour or two. Not because Michael the Train Man Labrich, who runs the show, expects families to stay for a minimum amount of time. But because it can be hard to pull the children away from the live, whirring thing that is a giant toy train display. It took Labrich of Bend about 8 carloads in 4 days to set up the 6 trains and the scenery around them. In one corner, the Barr family of Bend stood back watching their 3-year-old son Jack. As the train came around again, Jack stared straight ahead intently, his face inches away. "He's just mesmerized," Joanna Barr, 35, said as she leaned in to snap a photo of her son on her smartphone. The photo distracted Jack for a few seconds, but he quickly turned back to focus on the approaching locomotive. Not only was the young boy sitting still and quietly, but his hands were also folded neatly on his lap. "Good job, buddy, no hands," Scott Barr, 39, said.
"Good job."
The Barrs have a German Lehman Gross bond train, commonly known as an LGB at home. Not a T? Not an LGBT? Fine. This time of year, it runs around the Christmas tree, so to be fair, Jack had practice keeping his hands away from the temptation. Checking the time, Joanna realized Jack had been enjoying the train in his same seat for an hour. A feat for their young son. The train had a similar effect on many of the children there. At 1 p.m., the train man brought the trains to a halt. On the hour, Laveridge stops the trains to cool them down. The oldest piece he had running was made in 1926. When Caleb Neeland of 9 of Redmond walked in with his 9-year-old sister Alexis and dad Patrick, his eyes widened and jaw dropped. Patrick Neeland had surprised his children with the train event, and Caleb is especially partial to trains. "I think I like this one the best," he said, pointing to a locomotive with red and green working lights on the front. "It's like sending a signal." Throughout the afternoon, parents brought their children over to thank Labridge for sharing his toy trains with the community. He said these days, after 16 years of showing the display at the library, he gets less amusement out of controlling the trains himself than he does setting up and interacting with the people who attend. He often passes off the duty of the controls now to the volunteers who help him. "I feel like Tom Sawyer trying to paint the fence." Then a father approached with his daughter in his arms. "Can you say thank you for sharing your trains with us?" he asked her, grinning. His daughter tried her best to repeat it.
Tom Sawyer or Danielson?
Wax on, wax off. That's small town news. That's what's happening in Bend, Oregon. There was the train man showed up.
Man. Like, there's one point that I wanted to be the cynic and I wanted to laugh and like make fun, like some type of remark about the train man and like, dude, I don't want this guy around my kids. Like, I don't want this, you know, like the train man wants these kids around too much, you know? But then I was like, I remember as a kid and like, I remember like one of the things I enjoyed the most when I was like 7 years old going to the state, to the Alameda County Fair and seeing a big train set that they had set up there. And I just remember it was, as a kid, how much I liked it. And I was like, that's cool if kids still, you know, I mean, I don't have kids yet, you know, so.
One day, we'll have some next week.
There's plenty of time for you.
Exactly.
We'll see. You're still a young man.
I know. Well, you know, not as young as I used to be.
Well, your young bride is, though. Oh. That's the key. As men,
you can have him for a long time.
I know, with Tony Randall, right? Like, damn, that guy.
Yeah, he's one of the many. So I don't know. Anyway, that's gonna do it for. Hold on. There we go. The last show of 2015 is in the books. That's it.
Oh yeah.
Friday's show, the first show of 2016. Very exciting stuff, everybody.
Are you guys ready? I don't think they're ready.
Well, 2015, it's time for you to beat it.
Thanks for listening, and remember to use the Shop Amazon tab at natedarlingshow.com.